This episode is sponsored by the conference Inbound. Inbound 2021 online takes place October 12th through 14th and is hosted with love by HubSpot. No matter where you're tuning in from, you can connect with the global Black Inbound community across marketing, sales, customer success, and tech. Some of the speakers include Oprah Winfrey, Tristan Walker, CEO of Walker & Co. brand, Gogi Gupta, founder and CEO of Gupta Media, and Uwe Myers Ferguson, PhD, Assistant Dean of Impact and Engagement and Associate Professor at Howard University, and more. You can register for free with a starter pass now and upgrade later, or upgrade now and kick back later. Learn more at inbound.com/register. Use code POCKIT, which is POCIT, for 15% off any paid pass. Psst, ask your boss to expense it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a brand new Tech-ish. It's Abadesi from Hustle Crew here, joined with
Michael Bain from Pocket in the building. All right, cool. Let's get it cracking. First story, slightly depressing. If you're listening to this in the British Isles, you're very much aware that England just lost the Euro 2020 final. If you don't know what any of that is and you're listening in the States, it's a soccer match between two nations. It was England and Italy in the final. First time England ever got to the final in like 55 years. It's been a long time coming. And it went all the way to a penalty shootout, which is where basically the teams can't win based on like normal activity of the match. And unfortunately, England lost based on three Black players missing their penalties. Now, obviously, it's not really a tech story, but the reason why we bring it up is that obviously, you know, if you've been paying attention or if you've existed pretty much as a person, you can pretty much guess what happened next. So there was a backlash and there was a lot of racist abuse that these players faced. The Instagram comments were full of like monkey emojis. There's a mural of one of the players that was defaced. So it got really pathetic, actually. And then people tried to flag up the monkey emoji to Instagram and say, yo, like, can you like take this down? And their automated service basically said that's not against our guidelines. Like the monkey emoji under a Black person's comment section is not against our terms and services, right? Obviously, this is ridiculous and it's probably an automated reaction and not necessarily a person reviewing it, but it's kind of crazy. Some people are now saying, yo, like, we need to kind of have ID to sign up to social media. So people are thinking that a lot of this anonymous trolling would be kind of stopped if people had to put on like a driver's license or some kind of identification onto a social media platform. I think currently at the moment, you can just kind of just log on with your email and, you know, hey presto. What do you think of that as a current solution or as a perhaps a solution?
I think it's complicated because there are places on the internet where one needs to remain anonymous. And, you know, the internet has been an amazing place for people, especially people from non-dominant groups, to get information they need. I'm thinking of like Reddit forums and stuff like that. And even though it is generally a place that's quite homophobic, transphobic, racist, etc., there are little pockets of the internet where people who might face prejudice in real life can actually like connect with other people who share their lived experience and find friendship. So I do think there is value in the anonymity of the internet, but like all things that are that humans use and humans are engaged with, it's going to be as bad as we are, right? And there's no version of reality where there aren't bad apples. So I think that is something that is worth exploring, but I don't really think it's going to solve the problem, because what the problem is the fact that we have a historical context that's rooted in white supremacy and rooted in racism, and it's not gone anywhere and it's still alive today. Like, this is a country that sent Windrush emigres back home, right? After they'd done so much to contribute to the economy. I think the most problematic narrative that's come out of this racist backlash for me is people saying it's like, it's a minority, like, oh, what a shame this vocal racist minority of people are saying all these things and ruining it for the rest of us. If racists occupied such a minority in the world, whether it's UK, US, anywhere else in the white world, would the world be the way it is? Like, I just don't think so. I think, like, you know, we're all a bit racist, we're all a bit sexist. Some of us are a lot racist, a lot sexist. But as long as we continue to believe it's like this small vocal minority who voted for Brexit, are racist, are trolling, like, we're kind of just lying to ourselves. It's that collective amnesia that a lot of academics involved in race and social justice discourse talk about. You know, like, we forget that, no, this is a reality where people are prejudiced and can be prejudiced online without penalty. And so that's the big takeaway for me. I found out people didn't even know about Marcus Rashford buying school meals.
Who didn't?
Like, there are a lot of people who are like jumping in on this discussion because, I don't know, I guess people only read the news that's about people that look like them. I don't know. But
yeah, let me just clarify.
You know, one of the
audience,
footballers so, involved in this yeah. attack. Yeah, 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 please.
Yeah, so Marcus Rashford is one of the players who missed the penalty, and he actually has been kind of providing free school meals to a lot of underprivileged kids. Actually, the government has kind of cut back on free school meals, and he's actually, I think he was a recipient of free school meals as a youngster, so he cares very much about the issue, and he's put the government on the back foot and kind of forced them to actually reconsider their policy. But yeah, no, carry on.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, people are so rooted in their paths and like rooted in their echo chambers that they're criticizing, they're judging based on, you know, completely ignorant stereotypes and prejudices. Meanwhile, like they're not even aware of the full picture. So yeah, I think it's a real, real shame. Like, honestly, it was so funny watching this finals from Lagos because I was in Nigeria at the time and like no one was cheering for England.
Yeah.
It's like me and my husband were like the only people cheering for England. And it kind of made me start to understand how we're currently perceived
right.
in like the global landscape. And it's not good.
It's not good.
Really not
I think,
good.
Obviously the history of colonialization hasn't endeared us to the rest of the world. I say us like I was involved in any of that, but what you know
I saw
that collective guilt, like, but anyways, yeah, I mean, even myself, to be honest, I was supporting the players per se. Do you know what I'm saying? I support a lot of the players who come from similar backgrounds to me, or you know, who I could just see are young talented people that are trying their best. Like, I don't necessarily support the kind of entity England in that sense, in a sense that what comes with that is a lot of hooligan fans, a lot of racist fans, fans that were booing the Italian national anthem. Like, that's disgraceful kind of thing. And then these are fans actually that booed the players taking the knee. So obviously, if you're listening to the States, obviously Kaepernick was the guy who started it. And now, like most football players, before a game starts, they take their knee in kind of solidarity against racial discrimination.
Yeah.
And some of the England fans booed. And then our prime minister and one of his kind of higher ranking officials kind of came out and said the England fans had the right to boo, you know, such an quote unquote overtly political statement, basically, right? In their lingua franca. So these are the things that come with supporting England, and that's why I'm just like, you can miss me with it, but I like the players. I back them. You know what I'm saying? That's who I was rooting for.
Same.
You know what I'm saying? So
Saka.
But yeah, this is the
beast mode that match.
Yeah, but this is the thing, like, about it's a minority. Like, who's empowering this minority? We had our prime minister basically saying that Black Lives Matter and taking the knee, like, these are all problematic and they shouldn't be done, or you can boo them. You know what I'm saying? And then they want to come out and in solidarity after the players are abused racially, when it's like, that's what they were doing this for. That's why they took the knee. You know what I'm saying? Like, make it make sense. Like, you hypocrites. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I heard on Twitter, I haven't fact checked it, but there was a discussion in Parliament about the racist abuse, but apparently no single black MP was invited to speak.
Yeah, I'm
in
not surprised.
Session.
I'm not surprised though.
So that tells you all you need to know about our awareness of these issues.
Yeah, I think these people have this delusional idea that basically they take a really simplistic interpretation of like Martin Luther King and they'll throw it in your face about being colorblind, and they'll take that to mean that therefore you, as maybe privately educated white person, has as much right to speak on racism as a black person, even though you've probably never experienced it.
Yeah.
And it's obviously silliness. Like, it's like having a discussion on being, you know, disabled or blind and not having anybody there who's disabled or blind. I'm not equivocating the two, you know, things, but I'm talking about people's experiences, right? Do you know what I'm saying? So
the assumption and the audacity. And I know a lot of people that advocate for greater accessibility in tech who speak specifically about this. There is a privilege that comes with being in the dominant groups where you just assume so much and you assume you know, but you know, don't assume.
Yeah, it's cray cray.
So speaking about madness, can we talk about that big orange man trying to sue big tech?
Who's the big orange man? Break it down for me. Is it Senior Trump?
You know, yes, Mr. Trump.
Mr. Trump. So he's suing big tech, essentially claiming that they've taken away his First Amendment rights, saying it's censorship, and basically calling it an attack of cancel culture. I think Republicans have always basically said that Facebook and all of these platforms are anti-conservative, basically. I think that is pretty much delusional. I think it's...
Every conservative like group says this about like every platform when they're being ridiculous.
I remember they were even saying that.
So lame.
I remember they even said that Wikipedia was anti-conservative and somebody created like Conservapedia. Like, you know when you have to start creating your own facts. But I think where Trump is tactically very astute is that he most likely is running for president again. He probably is. He's not giving up. You know what I'm saying? It's 4 years time.
God help us all.
Yeah, and I think he's seen that. I don't think Biden is running again. Biden's pretty old. Let's keep it real. I think he's either going to give way to Kamala.
And Trump is not?
Trump
These
is not.
These two are like artificially animated.
You know
what? I don't even think they're
real. There's old and then there's old. And what I mean by that is that you can be old of age, but Trump is still kind of with it. He's always been kind of a loose cannon and not necessarily with it in what he says and what he thinks, but he still maintained his kind of level, if that makes sense. Whereas Biden, I think Biden is visibly not what he once was. I watched like some of his debates from 2012 and he hasn't got the same sharpness, right? And there's no shame in that. That's going to happen to all of us. Do you know what I mean? So I think Trump is going to go again and he's probably going to face Kamala. I think he's looking at the stats in terms of the polls and probably thinks he's got a good chance. Yeah, it's tactically genius because his base is going to eat up. They're going to love it. It's you portray yourself as the victim. You portray yourself as like, look, they've shut me down. You don't want to hear what I've got to say, right? And then at the same time, also, there is an element of truth in the sense that he is no longer relevant. Like, when you are no longer on these platforms, you disappear from the discourse. Mm. It just is. Like, it is what it is. Like, he took up every single headline. He could wake up in the morning, throw a little tweet, and all of a sudden, Washington Post, New York Times, Trump says this and Trump says that, and we're just on the back foot reacting. We don't even know what's the latest news really in the world. We just know what Trump said. So I think, I don't think you'll win, but I think it's an advisor. If he was advised to do this, he was pretty smart.
What I think is kind of baffling and stupefying about this whole thing is that the conversation is now about the ban itself and not why he was banned, right? Because I'll talk at length about why this big orange man was banned, but I have no interest in talking about the injustice that he feels as a result of it. It's literally like, I want to talk about how this hurt my feelings and how this has hurt my ego and how this has hurt my narcissism and need for attention. No, let's talk about why you got banned. You want to talk about why you got banned? You're going to have my attention. You want to talk about, you know, the shithole countries and all the other inflammatory things that you said, the hurtful, hateful things you said, the violence you incited. Fine. Mm-hmm. But for you to just skim over all of that and be like, I'm taking a stance on cancel culture. I was like, I mean, let's face it, some people need to be canceled. Like, they actually do. And if there's ever anyone that qualified for that, surely.
I think getting thrown off social media probably is the only incident where like you really are canceled, because you can lose a job and kind of get one back. Like a lot of people like Piers Morgan, who claims they've been canceled, they've got well-paying jobs in other kind of domains.
Is he on LinkedIn? Is he still on LinkedIn? He's still on something.
I don't think he's
Clubhouse.
He tried to set up his own like social media network and it flopped. You know, it's practically impossible to do so, innit? But where I think the next kind of 3 to 4 or 5 years will kind of play out is that we need to kind of have, I think there does need to be standards about who can be thrown off platforms. I know Facebook tried to create like the almost like their own version of the UN, like an outside council that can determine and adjudicate these cases that are outside of Facebook. But these people are paid by Facebook. So obviously, are they really going to go against Zuck in any real sense? I don't think so. So what will come of this, I don't know. But I think there does need to be more transparent standards about what it requires for a platform to throw you off. Do you get what I'm saying? Or do you want it to be?
I mean,
Jack Dorsey and Zuckerberg have the right to basically just do what they want. I don't think that's fair.
No, I don't think that's fair either. But the thing that really frustrates me about the timeline in which they eventually like made the decision to get rid of people like Trump and Alex Jones is that there were so many people making a very rational argument based off the guidelines as to why those people should have been off the platforms a lot longer.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's the existence of the rules that's holding us back. I think it's the choices authority make as to how to enforce those rules, right? Because, you know, Jack and Zuck, they could have done this a lot sooner without having to change anything as far as guidelines and rules go. Mm-hmm. But it was their choice to interpret the rules in such a way that they could stay on the platform until the point where it no longer served them to. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And this is the complexity and the nuance of human behavior. And that's why I was saying, like, everyone's out there looking for solutions. We're the problem. We're the problem most of the time. We individuals, the way we act, the way we interact, the information we share, the information we choose to hide, the way we communicate about our thoughts, our feelings, our desires, this is always what's flawed. And I just think, this ultimately came down to how the people with the most power to drive change in the situation chose to use that power. And at one point, it was not convenient for them to push them off the platform. And then at some point, it became convenient for them.
But this is why there needs to be, I think there needs to be external, not pressure, but external
adjudication. But then those people...
Because it's because... Twitter pretty much kept Trump on the platform for as long as possible because it was great for their business. He brought a lot of traffic and attention. As soon as it got too much, they were like, all right, cool, we got to kind of get rid of him. But up until then, he had broken many rules and wasn't kind of thrown off the platform. Now, if there was an external body that might even be neutral across all platforms, maybe it might not necessarily...
Impossible.
The thing is...
No one's neutral. If it's a computer, someone wants to build that AI.
I mean, in the sense that they don't work for Facebook or Twitter. Do you know what I'm saying? It might be across...
Who are they going to work for then?
This is the thing, I don't know.
Who's going to pay their salary?
It could be a non-profit of some kind. But this is the thing. I'm not looking for a perfect solution. I'm looking for a better solution than what we currently have. And that's the thing. Will that be an improvement over Zuckerberg and Dorsey just sitting there thinking, you know what? Our stock price is like this. Maybe we can keep him on for the day. There's got to be something better than that.
Someone should... Maybe a neural network. A neural network that can predict the future and guess over like a number of timelines what would be the best solution. Because I just think any individual, internal, external, third party, NGO, whatever, otherwise, is just not going to succeed in picking the right time to pull the plug.
I think it's better than the status quo, honestly, even if it is imperfect. But we'll leave it to the audience, see what they think. Hashtag Tekish, who wants to join the social media UN? Who wants to fix this for us?
Let's talk about the intergalactic pissing contest currently happening between some of the richest middle-aged white men in the world. Yes, of course, I am talking about Richard Branson flying to the edge of space, along with a few other teammates. The, I guess, latest milestone in the Virgin Galactic journey. Virgin Galactic is going to be a consumer space tech company. Mm-hmm. You would be able to pay $250,000 to reach the edge of space. I think it's like a 60-minute flight, then you get some weightlessness, then you come back. That ticket cost does not include offsetting your carbon footprint, by the way. So if you're environmentally oriented, you might want to think about that. While all of this is happening, you know, photos of, you know, Musk and Branson hugging and, you know, congratulating themselves and dreaming of the future. It's obviously not without controversy because between the two of them, they got a lot of money. And between their two space companies, a lot of money has been invested. And a lot of people are wondering, in a world where many people still can't even access the friggin' vaccine to fight a deadly coronavirus pandemic, whether this is the best use of billionaires' time and funds. Mm. So yeah, I kind of feel like it would be remiss of us to not talk about this because we talk about space Karen a lot on this podcast. And, you know, I mock the fact that he shot a car into space because I just think that's one of the stupidest things that we've ever done as a civilization. And now, of course, Virgin Galactic is happening. Now, my personal relationship with space has changed so much over like the 30-ish years I've been alive. When I was a kid in America, sipping from the Kool-Aid, I'd go to the Air and Space Museum. Mm. I'd watch the NASA space launches. I didn't at that time realize what I was buying into was, you know, one part of the US national identity and ultimately like one part of our propaganda machine, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's this idea of like, oh my God, space race, Cold War, la-da-da-da-da. Now, as I get older and I start to kind of like be more compassionate to the needs of like the global human civilization, it feels very wasteful to me and very reckless and just not like the best use of funds. So I am quite glad that this is now a narrative gaining more momentum and gaining more attention because it is just ridiculous. I'm sorry, it's just ridiculous. I don't understand. Why do we need to go to space? There's literally nothing there, okay? Like, we have been sending friggin' satellites to the edges and back. There is nothing there. There are things here. Don't get me wrong, space looks cool, but like, I've seen the planets. Earth is by far the best. It's so beautiful. It's amazing. And I just don't understand. Like, is this toxic masculinity? Is this what happens when you just need to constantly compete and seek status and be the first? And yeah, you're the man on the show, so you tell me.
I think in Branson's defense, his thing is not like, I'm trying to go to Mars. His thing is like, we'll take it to the edge of space and eventually you'll be able to go to like from San Francisco to Japan in like 1 hour, basically. So I think he's looking at it more from a commercial transportation vehicle that at the moment is super expensive. But I guess with time, just like how airlines originally were super expensive, like just normal planes, and then eventually, you know, it might be 5,000 or 10,000 to do it. It ain't going to me because I'm not going in space to get to anywhere like that. Like, I'm not in that much of a rush, right, basically, to risk my life. But I think that's what he would defend his company versus Bezos versus Elon, right? So if we lived in a world where transportation was now radically reduced and you could get other places like real quick, would you not say that is a net benefit?
I just think there are bigger, more pressing problems to solve. Okay, first of all, if that happens, none of us will be able to afford it. This is a 1% problem. Oh God, it takes so long to get from London to Tokyo so I can eat my favorite bowl of Wagyu beef and ramen. That is a friggin' 1% problem. Who needs to get from LA to Tokyo in 1 hour?
Why?
First of all, get on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
If you need to talk to someone in that part of the world so badly. Second of all, what is that going to do to your circadian rhythm and your health? Third of all, what is that going to do to the planet? We need to be flying less, not more. We need to be traveling less, not more. We need to be doing more sustainable things. And I'm just sick of these 1% problems being solved.
But the thing is, though,
I'm so sick of these 1% problems being solved when there are so many people that don't have basic things, people living in poverty.
But that's millions, always been the case. Billions. Like, we could have looked at the Wright brothers and said, why are you going trying to fly a plane for? Like, there's people starving. You know what I'm saying? At any point in time, we could.
But we didn't have the internet then. We didn't know that.
What do you mean?
We didn't know
it as so well. You would have been there, Wright brothers, stop. Like, don't fly that plane. There's people starving. I get the point. Don't get twisted. I'm partial to what you're saying as well. But I just don't know. I never say that technology is a bad thing to me, like, in that sense, like, out and out, like, oh, we should stop working on this, like, completely, right?
No, technology is not bad. It's the choices that the people making technology, it's those choices that are bad. And what I'm trying to say is, like, I am judging Richard Branson and Elon Musk for choosing to pursue this. Richard Branson, by his own admission, was like, this is a childhood dream of mine. And don't get me wrong, if I was a multi-billionaire and I could literally do whatever I want, I might want to just start, I don't know, building some pipe dreams like this and be like, I'm just going to use all my money to go to space and then create a nice narrative around why that makes sense for society. Because, you know, I do feel like there's a bit of that happening here. Mm. But it just feels very short-termist, and it feels selfish.
Perhaps. I think, I mean, capitalism is, it's all selfish. Everyone's trying to make money out here, right? So I think, I don't know, I think compared to...
In this version of capitalism.
Yeah, I mean, but I think compared to Elon, and I just think Elon and Bezos trying to go to different planets is stupid right now. I don't think it makes any sense. But I think trying to make transportation quicker eventually is not a bad thing. Of course, right now it's super expensive, but so are airlines. Like I said, like, it's basic economics, right? Everything starts off as super rich for the super rich, and then eventually kind of works its way down. Theoretically, anyway. But we'll see, man. The one thing where I do think,
I don't know, I don't feel like Henry Ford built the Model T for the 1%.
Yeah, but
he built the Model T as a car for every man.
He didn't invent the car, though, did he? The first car was probably expensive to buy, and then eventually he was the person who said, I'm going to kind of economies of scale, streamline it, and make
that.
No, he wasn't the first car, absolutely not. He didn't invent a car. He made the car for every man because people had built cars before that and it was super expensive, and then he said, okay, well, let me like make it cheaper, basically. But go on, what were you gonna say?
I don't buy into that. I don't buy into the fact that people with the most disposable income are the ones that drive innovation. I just think that's what's happening in the case of space, but I think it's really dumb and really pointless and really friggin' stupid. It just makes me angry. Actually.
I'm not saying they drive innovation, but when you first try to create anything, because it's the first of anything, you haven't basically got economies of scale. Like, you're just kind of trying things out, and then eventually that first product is normally quite expensive. If I build a prototype of anything, it's going to be the most expensive version of it. Then when I get a factory making it, then it gets cheaper eventually.
I would put money on the fact that commercial space travel will not take off. I will put a lot of money on that version of the future. Trust me, you know what's going to happen? Sadly, unfortunately, one high-profile person is likely to die on a commercial space voyage, and that is going to make them have super negative PR, and no one's going to want to do it anymore.
Yeah, you know,
because that's what happened with commercial air flight at the beginning. What was that massive balloon? Balloon that flew from like Germany to America. Yes.
Yeah.
There was a crash, people died, and literally for decades, no one even explored aviation again until something else happened. This space nonsense is still too high risk. All it's going to take is like one super famous person that the world loves to friggin' blow up out there, and then boom, that's it. No one's going to bother with it for a long time.
Yeah, you might be right. I think some people have died already in the Virgin Galactic. Like, the test pilots did die like a couple of years ago. So it's a very real risk that you're running going in these things. Who knows? I mean, like, you know, many people have died. And
the first time they give a black celebrity a free ticket, something's going to go wrong. Watch it.
Yeah. We'll see in it. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Will you take a free ticket?
I absolutely will not. Hell no. Hell no. Like, that's not for me.
Live from Mars.
Anyways, we'll see.
This episode is sponsored by Aha. Aha is the world's number one roadmap software, helping more than 5,000 companies build lovable products and be happy doing it. Ahar is looking for a VP of marketing to join their highly collaborative group of experts across digital, content, and product marketing disciplines. You should be a go-to-market innovator with a track record of successfully defining and implementing acquisition strategies in a high-growth SaaS company. If this sounds like you, check out our role on pocketjobs.com.
So the Emmy Awards nominations have been released for 2020 and the streaming platforms have come through in force. We've got a whole bunch of shows nominated. Cobra Kai, Bridgerton, The Boys, The Crown, Queen's Gambit, WandaVision. It's obviously a streaming boom. Netflix is dominating. They never actually won an Emmy actually in any of the kind of serious categories like drama, comedy, whatever. So apparently now this might be the end of their dry spell. What say you? Like, is this how things are going to be? Like, every show pretty much nominated going forward will be streaming? Or was it because it was a pandemic? Like, let's keep it real. But Emmy is TV, it's not cinema, is it?
So for TV,
is the future, really. What else is there?
I think there's so many things. I think one of the things that's amazing is that, you know, tech is one of the richest, most productive, fastest growing industries in the world. And if it has to compete with like traditional media and traditional entertainment, companies like Apple and Netflix are now in a position to get the most talented people away from the more traditional production companies and get them to write for them. Yeah. And we've seen that happening over the last few years. So I think they've been able to like capture some of the best talent. And that's something that, you know, really is worth mentioning. I think the second thing is that, again, by virtue of being a tech company, they've been able to really like stay tied and connected to what people are talking about on social media, on their platforms. I mean, for all we know, Apple's reading our iMessage conversations to inform some of their shows. I don't know. It's probably illegal, but they do it. Who knows? Allegedly. Don't have confirmation of that. But I just think there's like a number of advantages that tech companies have by their design and by their resources to innovate and craft in a way that makes them more competitive and ultimately more successful than production companies. And like, I'll even hazard a guess that they've been able to, in many ways, like tap into more underrepresented voices and underrepresented talent. And that's been a huge advantage for them as well, because, you know, tech companies, they're not perfect, but they're going to be more forward thinking than some of those more traditional companies. I mean, you know, we spoke on the show a while back about Charles King, the guy behind, what was David Kaluuya's movie about?
Oh, Daniel Kaluuya's Judas and the Black Messiah.
Daniel Kaluuya's. Yes, exactly. And, you know, the production company behind that is run by that media executive, Charles King. And one of the first distribution deals he had was with Netflix. You know, he shopped it around. That was the movie with Mary J. Blige, Mudbound.
Mudbound, okay.
Mudbound. So he shopped that around with a bunch of different production companies, but he's like, do you know what? Netflix will get it. So, you know, just using that as like an anecdotal evidence, I think they've just been able to see opportunities about what audiences want, been more open-minded, basically, and that's now being recognized by the awards.
Yeah, obviously the larger budgets as well, it definitely helps. And I think, so Netflix excluded, a lot of these streaming platforms don't need to make money on their content, so they can spend, you know, godly sums on like their shows. Like, for example, Amazon and Apple don't make money from content. Apple makes money selling phones and Amazon makes money selling you toilet roll, basically, right? And AWS. So these content is almost like a loss leader where they can just put as much money as they want into the content, knowing they're going to make it back up again as long as they've got you on Amazon Prime, as long as you've got an iPhone, right? So how does a normal TV company compete against that? You can't. Like HBO, who's like, we need to maintain our margin. Like, you can't. You know what I'm saying? And then obviously, like you said, stuff like Netflix, they've got so much data they can look at. When did you stop watching? Like, when does, like, what episode do people fall off on? Like, you know, what minute do people, like, where are people pausing it? Like, what characters do they look like? You know, it's all kind of, as in, like, even down to, we talked about how, for example, with black Netflix subscribers, you tend to get recommended images for what might be a white show.
The thumbnails have the black characters.
So it's a whole white show and there's one black character and you'll just see a thumbnail with a black character because they know that predominantly you're either a black or you're interested in black stuff. So how does like a normal, how does HBO compete with that? I don't know, right? So HBO's got their own streaming platform now, I think they do, right? It's not here in the UK, but
HBO Max.
So streaming's the future. It's all going to be streaming. It's a done deal. And yeah, shout out to Netflix. They created a hell of a lot of good shows. Cobra Kai, a lot I'm a fan of. The Crown is sick. Queen's Gambit was sick. It's all great. So apparently, let's just talk about the Amazon crackdown quickly. So this is something, so I saw something on social media where somebody says, is there a way for me to kind of, when I'm searching through Amazon, to get rid of the kind of Amazon marketplace products so I can just see what's being sold by Amazon? I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I do find that the quality on Amazon, it's quite poor, to be honest. Like, sometimes I'm searching on there, it's not the cheapest, and there's a whole bunch of like third-party sellers kind of selling crap. And listen, if you're a small business on there doing your thing, I'm happy for you. But a lot of it is low quality. So basically, now Amazon over the past 2 months has suspended over 300 merchants from China from its platform. So often you're thinking you're buying something on Amazon and it's like a third party seller based in China and they're just importing it basically direct from a Chinese factory. Not necessarily bad quality. Most of our stuff is made in China, you know what I'm saying? So it's no big deal. But there are, of the 300 merchants, there were a few tactics like fake customer reviews, you know, manipulating reviews. Yeah, so
classic.
I don't know. I know you're not trying to use Amazon no more, but when you did use Amazon, probably more in the past.
I am. I'm trying to help you because
I'm trying to make sure that you're not exposed to it. But so, okay, cool. So as you use Amazon, am I the only one? Do you notice that kind of dip in quality to a certain extent where you're like, you know what? There's a lot of crap on here.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. And you have to really be careful with like the default rankings and stuff absolutely. Like that, because often Amazon is just showing you the price from lowest to highest. And I'm just like, it's getting like eBay up in her.
Yeah.
It's like very like so clearly like Alibaba off the rack or whatever, off the friggin' conveyor belt, basic stuff. So I think it's about time. I mean, to be honest, like I'm surprised they haven't done this sooner because there must be so many people who've bought, you know, one of the like first on the list because it's just the cheapest things, only to end up like having to return it, replace it. And that's just not what Amazon has established its name on. Like it's established its name on like good value, and good value means something that actually works and lasts to some degree.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's good. And I think, you know, fake reviews is so hard. I don't know when anyone will ever be able to crack it. And I think as consumers, we've had to become either so adept in reading reviews, right? Because the fake ones are the ones that have like very zero balance, or increasingly turn to more curated sites, you know, things like Thing Testing or Product Hunt or wherever, where we know that it is user-generated content from other consumers. That's the only content allowed to be there, as opposed to stuff that could potentially be infiltrated by brands. But I mean, I do think that we have to just really put a lot of energy into conscious consumerism. I'm holding myself accountable to that as well. Like at the end of the day, if we are only motivated by price, we are going to kill our planet and we're going to kill the people involved in that supply chain, because someone's got to make that. There's still manual work involved somewhere along that chain. And I think it just falls on all of us to just do more. Like, you know, what can you actually really afford? Mm. And, you know, can you buy local? Can you buy something to last? And don't just be lured in by the cheapest price. Like, don't just optimize for the cheapest price.
It's difficult though, man. I mean, I think people who can afford more, yeah, do that. But obviously there are many people actually who just, you know, price is all they can go on because that's all they've got. You know what I'm saying? They don't have the luxury of filtering for anything else just based on their maybe lower income.
But it's not just price that we're doing. It's like the access of price and convenience. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't have an ability to control price, but we do have an ability to control our attitude towards convenience. And you can get cheap things in charity shops, or I don't know, you can borrow stuff, or you can go on like Nextdoor or Marketplace or Facebook Marketplace or whatever and just see if someone's going to sell you something cheap, Gumtree even. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that we're kind of kidding ourselves about, we're lying to ourselves about, is how much we're driven by convenience.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And we're driven by short-term convenience, not by long-term values or goals. And that's the part of our brain that we need to change. I'm trying to work on that. I'm trying to pinch myself when I'm like too lazy to like cook and I'm just like, oh, let me just get Deliveroo. I'm just like, no, what does that mean when you just get a delivery, you know, in terms of like the overall impact? And like, can you just stop being so lazy and impatient and do something? And it's hard.
It's hard. I saw someone say like, we've trained a whole generation to expect to have servants now. Like you've got a whole bunch of like Gen Z and millennials. I mean, when you're booking something on Deliveroo or on any kind of service to pick up your, you're literally having a servant do it for you. Like in years gone by, it would have been like, that's a servant. You're paying them ad hoc, like per transaction. But you know, we're all used to having people just wait on us hand and foot now, right? Really. And I don't know if I've got the range to unpack that, whether that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, because people are getting paid. But you know, is that the right way we should be setting up our economy? Will people have to be servants to get paid? I don't know. The other thing, speaking of like convenience and price, for example, have you noticed how Uber prices have just gone through the roof, fam? Have you tried to book an Uber in the last last few months?
I literally had like an exec Uber to a meeting the other day and back that was like close to £100. I was like, saying, what just happened?
Yeah, I'm sure you charged the company card on that one.
But I was literally like, how was my Uber £70?
I feel like though, we were just in a false economy.
I was within London. Yeah. I was within London.
But I feel like we were just kind of in like a false economy beforehand. Like we were just so used to like Ubers being like, you know, so cheap. It just never made sense. And like, we used to hear the taxi people complain and say, yo, we can't compete with these prices. And we never stood there to think, why? Like, what are they talking about here? And I feel like Uber now has... So I don't think the drivers are getting more money. That's for damn sure. But I think Uber has run on VC money. They've burnt all the VC money basically now. And it's like time to get profitable. So now we've got everybody entrenched in our platform. Let's now turn up the screw and put on the real prices, which are these kind of... what we think to be inflated, but it probably is a more accurate reflection of the transaction that should be happening. If Uber is to survive as a company, it needs to make some money. It's never made a penny in like 10, 12, 13 years since it's been around, like, which is insane. But yeah, it's probably a good thing. I think it's best that we kind of get used to kind of taking public transport and just going back to the old ways. Like, all of us expecting to have a private driver for like $10 to take down for 20 miles. It just never made sense beforehand. You know what I'm saying?
So messed up.
We took it for granted. We rode it. And why I think it's based on Uber's specifically and not just the economy in general is that there are other ride serving apps that I look at sometimes and their prices are still rock bottom because they're probably still burning through their VC money, whereas Uber now is at the stage where it's like, we need to start making money now. It's been like 15 years. Our investors are expecting a return now. You know, it's part of the reason why I never bought the Uber stock. I just thought it was a terrible business. It's a great service for convenience, but it's a terrible company, like, as a platform. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I was the same person that was like, we need to fight for the rights of the workers in this economy. Mm. Like, we need to make sure they're treated like full-time employees. And maybe, like you said, this is like the reality call those of us that want a more conscious capitalism needed to realize this is the true cost of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so quick shout out segment. Actually, I'm hiring at Pocket for a writer. The link to the show in the
I can write.
Yeah, okay, well then apply. The link will be in the show notes. You'll be helping us write articles in Pocket about Black and Brown people and all the wonderful things they're doing in tech, helping us with our newsletter, full-time job. Hit me up, link in the show notes. I look forward to seeing your application. Anything you want to shout out?
Can I plug? Yeah, Brandwatch are hiring. Y'all know I'm like the first ever VP of global community and belonging at Brandwatch. We're a global team. We are a remote optimized team, and we're hiring for a bunch of roles from design, engineering, sales. Add me on LinkedIn if you want to hear more, or just check out brandwatch.com/careers. Always happy to chat with folks that want to know more about the culture off the record.
Thank you for listening. That's been this week's Techish. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff.
Bye-bye.
Hit us up on hashtag Techish and follow us at TechishPod on Instagram and Twitter.
At TechishPod.
And you can follow us on our personal socials as well. The link on that, it's all in the show notes. And please leave a review. We love to hear from you. All right, cool. Peace. Ciao.
Bye.